Midnight Theater.
David Valla, Malcolm Hayes, Frank Duncan, and Peter Howell as Detective Superintendent Allen in Death of the Dolphin, adapted by Alison Plowden from the novel by Niall Marsh. On the south bank of the Thames, not much more than a stone's throw from where Burbage and his players, among them Mr. William Shakespeare, once used to perform at the Globe, stands the Dolphin Theatre, formerly a palace of refined and original entertainment under the proprietorship of Mr. Adolphus Ruby. Now, derelict and forlorn, the wounded dolphin lurks in a narrow, ambiguous street running down towards the river. Here, on a wet and windy morning in February, came Peregrine Jay, director and playwright.
Oh, damn. Damn. Well, won't budge. Why the hell didn't I ask that blasted agent for an oil can?
Got it all on your own, mate, ain't you?
Eh?
You want a touch of the old three-in-one?
What?
Oil, mate. Lubrication.
Oh, yes, I know I do. No, it's no good. I'd better try the stage door.
Yeah, let's take a butcher's. A touch of oil. That's all you need. Shift over, then. Let the dogs see the rabbit. What's the story, anyway? Case in the joint?
Well, I just want to have a look.
Rather you than me. Well, here we are. Sweet as a nut. It's all yours, mate. Seats in all parts.
That's very good of you. I'm most grateful.
No trouble. You thinking of buying up the old dolphin, then?
Well, if I was a millionaire, I would, like a shot.
Well, it takes all sorts, as they say. Not but what is a pity to see it left to rot. Must have looked a fair treat in the old days.
Yes. It was in its heyday back in the 1880s when Adolphus Ruby took it over.
Oh, is that so? Yeah. It ain't been a theatre for a good while now. That I do know. Rag dealer's store it was before the Blitz caught it. Oh, God, what a stink. I should watch out for rats in air if I was you.
Yes, I will. Yes, look, I'm very much obliged for your help. You must have a drink on me.
Oh, never say no to that one, Mr. Tar.
You work somewhere around here?
That's right. Down Phipps Passage. Caretaker.
Oh.
Jobbins is the name. Used to be a lighter man, but it done no good to me, too. Well, so long, sir. Best of British luck. Hope you give yourself a treat with all them spooks.
Bye. Thanks a lot.
Lord, what a mess. Now, where are we? Foyer? Box office? It's bigger than I thought. Dress circle that way. To the Paris bar. Now, upstairs first or the stalls? No. Stage first. It's like the dust of ages. Not a mouse stirring. Ooh. Yes, there is. It's rats, though, I should think. Filthy. Now, past door. Ah, yes. Prompt side box. Now, steps. Don't want to put my foot through. No, they seem all right. Surprisingly undamaged, really. Ah, how the lovely it must have been. Red plush and gilt. That shaft of light plays queer tricks. Must be coming in from the roof somewhere. You can almost see the audience. Ringlets and side whiskers and chandeliers. Rustle of programs. Huh. Wonderful. No! God! Why aren't I a bloody Bond? Why can't I make my bloody arms hitch me up? God, don't let me drown. I'm up to my neck in some ghastly, unspeakable muck. Can't touch bottom. It's some sort of well. Trapped for Hamlet's ghost of the Demon King. Why did I step back? Why the hell didn't I look where I was going? What in God's name am I going to do? Would anyone hear if I yelled? Aye, that bloke with the oil can. Hello, Jobbins! Help! If I could manage an upward thing like a frog... No. No good. I can't. I can't hang on like this much longer. Fingers are going numb. God, I'm going to drown. I can't hang on. There is someone. I say, here. Quick, help. Come up here, will you? On stage. For God's sake, come quickly. I've fallen through the stage. I'll drown. Who are you? Well, why don't you answer? Look out. Look out for the hole. Now, look out for my hands. I've got gloves on. Don't trip on my hands. Get me out of this and say something. Doesn't need much. Just give me a heave and I can do it.
Very well.
No. Oh, thank you. I couldn't be more grateful. God, I stink.
You are Mr. Peregrine Jay?
Yes, but...
The people at the estate agents told me you were here.
Oh.
You should have a bath and change. My car is outside.
Well, I can't get into anyone's car in this state. You're awfully kind, but...
Wait a moment. No. Come to the front of the theater.
Look, sir, it's very good of you, but I live quite close, just across the river at Blackfriars. Now, if I could just have a taxi or...
Hey, Morrison.
Yes, sir?
This gentleman has had an unfortunate accident. There is a Macintosh in the car.
Ah, yes, sir, of course. I'll fetch it at once, sir.
Well, if you could drop me at my flat or the Unicorn Theatre, I shall be able to manage perfectly well.
I really do beg that you will allow me to come to your rescue. I mean to take you to my house and set you right. I shall be most upset otherwise, most upset.
But I'm giving you far too much trouble. Honestly, I never...
I beg you to come back with me. There has been gross negligence. I am responsible.
What?
Unless you allow me to make some amends, I shall feel very guilty.
Responsible? But I don't see what
it
you...
It will not take very long, I hope. I live in Curzon Street. The car will take us straight there.
Here we are, sir.
Thanks.
Now, if you will allow me, sir.
I'm afraid I'm being a most infernal nuisance. I really wish you'd just drop me off.
If you are quite ready, sir, Mr. Conducis sends his compliments and hopes you will join him in the library.
Oh, yes. Did you say Mr. Conducis?
Yes, sir. Mr. Vasily Conducis. If you will step this way, sir. Mr. Jay, sir.
Oh, come in. Yes, come in. You are better, recovered?
Yes, indeed. I can't thank you enough, sir. And as for, well, lending me these clothes...
I told you, I am responsible. You might have been drowned.
But honestly, sir, you saved my life, you know. If you hadn't come along, I'd just have hung on by my fingers till they gave out and then, well, finally and disgustingly drowned, as you say.
I should have blamed myself.
Why on earth? For a hole in the dolphin stage?
It is my property.
Oh. Oh. How splendid.
Why do you say that?
I mean, how splendid to own it. It's such a beautiful little playhouse.
Indeed. You make a study of theatres, perhaps?
Well, not really. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I earn my living in theatres and I'm enormously attracted by old ones.
I see. Will you join me in a drink? I'm sure you will.
Your man has already given me a very strong and restoring hot rum and lemon.
I'm sure you will have another.
A very small one, please. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, shall we sit down?
Oh, thank you.
You wonder why I was at the theater, perhaps. There's some question of demolishing and building on the site. I wanted to refresh my memory.
You're going to pull it down?
You dislike the proposal? Have you any reason, apart from a general interest in such buildings?
Well, it'd be such a loss. Such a really damnable shame to see it destroyed. It's the last one of its kind, you know. And so well designed, such a large stage. You could mount really big productions there. Now, just think what a thing it would be to do a season of Shakespeare's comedies. Imagine Love's Labour's there. Perhaps one could have a barge, and people could take water to go to the play. It's a marvellous plan. There's never been anything like it since Burbage moved the first theatre from Shoreditch to Southwark. Nothing fancy, mind you, nothing tweed, and not pastiche either. Just a good theatre doing the job it was meant to do. Stuff that doesn't belong to any bloody method or movement or trend or period or what have you.
You are referring to Shakespeare again, if I follow you.
Well, of course I am. Oh, dear.
Is something the matter?
Well, I'm afraid I'm a bit tight, sir. I'm not really tight, but I'm a bit light-headed. I'm awfully sorry. I think perhaps I'd better take myself off. I'll return all these things you so kindly lent me as soon as possible, of course.
What do you do in the theatre?
Well, I direct plays, and I've written too.
I know nothing of the theatre. You are successful?
Well, sir, yes, I think so, moderately. It's a jungle, of course. I'm not at all affluent, but I make out. Now, if you'll forgive me.
Yeah, before you go, I have something that may be of interest to you. You can spare a moment?
Oh, yes, of course.
It is in this room.
That's beautiful.
Oh, you mean the bureau? Yes, it was found for me. I understand nothing of such matters. This is what I wanted to show you. Shall we move to a table? This box. It is some kind of portable writing desk. There's a false bottom.
Steam yacht Calliope off Villefranche.
Now, that is nothing. I have no consequence. It is the package which may be of interest. Will you open it?
Yes. It's a glove. Child's glove, surely.
There are two papers. Will you read them?
This little glove and accompanying note were given to my great-great-grandmother by her best friend, Miss or Mrs. J. Hart. My dear grandmother always insisted that it had belonged to the poet. See the mark inside gauntlet. ME, 23rd of April, 1830. And the note? Dear God, it can't be. Made by my father for my son on his 11th birthday and never worn but once. Where did it come from? Whose is it?
It is mine, naturally.
But where'd you find it?
At sea.
At sea?
During a voyage 6 years ago, I bought it. The box was a family possession. The former owner did not discover the false bottom until shortly before he died.
Has it been shown to anyone? An expert?
No, I should no doubt get an opinion from some museum. I have not looked it all up. But I understand the age of the boy at the time of his death is consistent with the evidence, and that the grandfather was, in fact, a glover.
Oh, yes.
And the initials inside the gauntlet do, in fact, correspond with the child's initials?
Yes. Hamnet Shakespeare.
Quite so. Hamnet Shakespeare.
I know it, Matt. You don't need to keep on about it, Jerry. I know all the odds are against this glove being anything but a fake. I'm just telling you that with the thing lying there in front of me, I was knocked all over the heap.
Well, not only by that, I understand. There you were, half drowned, half drunk, yes. Dressed up in a millionaire's clobber.
Yeah, well, the whole thing was really most extraordinary. I almost wonder now if any of it really happened. Now, Jerry, what do you think? About the glove, I mean. You're supposed to know about costume and design.
Oh, my dear Perry, it's one thing to know about theatrical tat, even quite high-class theatrical tat, but this is something else altogether. Well, let's have another look at that sketch of yours.
Here you are. It's rough, but I think it's accurate as far as it goes.
Well, it looks okay. It's elaborate in the right way. It's tab. embroidered, tapering to the wrist. It's... What about the leather?
Oh, fine as fine. Yellow and soft and wrinkled and old. I can't tell you how old it looked.
Well, it may be an Elizabethan or Jacobean glove, but the letter could easily be a forgery.
Why? Nobody's tried to cash in on it.
Well, you don't know. You don't really know anything about its history.
Except that it was given to M.E.'s great-great-grandma by a Mrs. J. Hart. And Joan Hart...
Nay, Shakespeare was left wearing apparel by her brother.
Yeah,
well, that's just the sort of detail any good faker would have mugged up. Only an expert could tell for certain.
I told you. I said so. I said, wouldn't he take it to the V&A? And he gave me one of his weird looks, furtive and scared, blank. Oh, I don't know how you describe it. And shut up like a clam.
Suspicious in itself. What do we know about Conducis, anyway?
Well, not much. He's an all-time high for money, isn't he? There was a piece in one of the Sunday supplements some time back about how he loathes publicity and does a garbo and leaves Mr. Gulbenkian wondering what it was that passed him.
Where'd you get his pelf?
I don't remember. Isn't it always oil? Oh, Mystery Midas, this thing was headed. Saw it at the dentist.
And he owns the Dolphin, and he's going to pull it down and put up another waffle iron on the South Bank.
Oh, you must go and look at it, Jerry. It'll slay you. Wrought iron, cherubs, caryatids, a marvellous sort of mix-up of early and mid-Victorian, designed by an angel. God, well, I think what could be done with
and
it.
And this ghastly old Croesus.
Doesn't bear thinking of.
Shall we wait upon him and crash down on our knees before him, crying, oh, please, kind sir, pray, spare the Dolphin.
I can tell you exactly what the reaction would be. He'd back away as if we smelt and say in that deadpan voice of his that he knew nothing of such matters.
I wonder what it had cost.
What, to restore? Hundreds of thousands, you think? But you know what?
What?
The glove. It's given me an idea.
Really?
Yes, I know. It's frightening. The sensation of lust for possession. The sheer naked greed.
There's been murder done for less.
Post. Can't be. It's the wrong time.
Perhaps it's a special delivery from Mr. Conducis offering to make you a present to the Dolphin.
Very funny.
Well, go and see. Anyway, you're making me nervous wandering about like that.
Okay. But it could only be an advert or something. Jerry!
Now what, for pity's sake?
Now listen to this. Now, just bloody listen. Dear sir, I am directed by Mr. V.M.G. Conducis to inform you that he has given some consideration to the future of the Dolphin Theatre, Wharfingers Lane, which he had occasion to discuss with you this morning. Mr. Conducis would be interested to have the matter examined in greater detail. He therefore suggests that you call at the offices of Consolidated Oils at 11:30 a.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, and speak to Mr. S. Greenslade, who has been fully informed of the subject in question. I am yours truly, M. Smithyman, Private Secretary to Mr. Conducis.
Not true.
It's true. Well, apparently, as far as it goes.
You know, I have a notion he was once wrecked at sea.
Who?
Conducis, you don't. Oh. Who else? In his yacht.
Oh, was his yacht called the Calliope?
No, I rather think it was. I'm sure it sank. Hey, perhaps your falling down his dirty great well reminded the old boy or something.
If you'd seen him, you wouldn't call him an old boy. He's the uncosiest human being I've ever laid eyes on.
Be that as it may, you better posh yourself up and wait upon... Who is it? S. Greenslade on the stroke of 11:30.
Well, I will, of course. All the same, Jerry, we mustn't make a thing about this. I simply cannot believe that it'll turn out to be anything but a very odd little incident.
You appreciate, of course, Mr. J., the fact that your meeting yesterday with Mr. Conducis has led to this interview?
I suppose so, yes.
I don't know if you're at all informed about Mr. Conducis and his various interests.
Well, no, not really. Only that he's...
He's extremely wealthy and something of a recluse.
Yes.
Quite so. Well, Mr. Jay, I am instructed to make you an offer, which you may find a little surprising. Mr. Conducis is prepared to consider the rehabilitation of the Dolphin, subject naturally to favorable reports by an architect and the granting of planning permission. He will finance this enterprise on one condition.
On one condition?
That you will undertake its working management. Mr. Conducis offers you, upon terms to be arranged, the post of organizing and running the theater, planning its artistic policy, engaging the company, and directing the productions. I should be glad to know what your reactions are.
Well, it'd be crazy to pretend that I'm anything but astonished and delighted.
Good. In that case, I will proceed with the preliminary investigations. There is one other matter. You are, I believe, already familiar with the contents of this package.
I said I wished they could be shown to an expert.
Quite so. Mr. Conducis has taken your point. Wonders if you would be so kind as to act for him in this respect.
Yes,
with this proviso. Mr. Conducis does not, at any juncture, wish to be approached directly. And the matter must be treated as strictly confidential.
Mr. Greenslade, why is Mr. Conducis doing all this? I mean, why is he giving me the chance of such a really fantastic opportunity?
I will be frank with you, Mr. Jay. I'm at a loss to know why Mr. Conducis is taking this action. But he is a man of quick decisions, and you might say something of a law unto himself.
I see.
And you will undertake this commission?
Yes, I will.
Good, splendid.
Well, I haven't laughed it out, of course.
No, it really does begin to look as though... Well, anyway, it all depends now on the handwriting expert.
You'll send this report to the man Greenslade?
Well, yes, of course.
Hey, what about opening at the Dolphin this time next year with a glove, a new play by Peregrine Jay?
Oh, gotcha.
Well, why not? Come on. Let's do a shadow casting just for the hell of it.
Well, I already have.
Well, give us a look. Who have you got down for Shakespeare?
Well, it sticks out a mile, doesn't it?
Elizabethan angry, really, isn't he?
Yeah.
Lonely, chancy, tricky, bright as the sun, enormously oversexed, looking like the Grafton portrait.
All right. Who looks and plays like that? Marcus Knight, my God! Of course, he is the Grafton portrait. And as for fire, well, think of his Hotspur and his Harry Fife and his Hamlet. Remember the Peer Gynt?
Has he ever been known to get to a production without creating a procession of dirty great rows?
Never.
He's said to be more than usually explosive just now on account of no knighthood last batch.
All the same, he's a brilliant actor, and this is a part he could play. Now, I've settled for rolling the lovely boy and the seduced fair friend and Mr. W.H. all up in one character.
Yeah, there have been madder notions before now. Adds up to a damn good part. How do you see him?
Very blonde, very male, and very flip.
W. Hartley Grove.
Could be. Typecasting.
You know, isn't he a bit of a shady character? There are stories...
Oh, I don't know about that. He can be a nuisance, though, and a mischief maker.
What about your dark lady? Destiny Mead, I see you've got here.
Well, I rather thought Destiny. She's cement from the eyes up, but she gives a great impression of smouldering depths and really inexhaustible sex. Oh, and she lives, by the way, with Marco Knight.
That might or might not be handy. Anne Hathaway?
Oh, any sound, unsympathetic actress with good attack.
Like Gertie Bracey?
Yeah.
I'd tell you who'd be good as Joan Hart.
Who?
Emily Dunn. She did some very nice Celias and Narissas, you know, Stratford.
Mm.
Put it down on your list.
I will, thanks.
Charlie Random for Dr. Hall. Mm. Have you thought of an infant wonder?
Not yet.
I suppose we'll get some stunted teenager acting its pants off. It'll be called Gary, of course.
Oh, Trevor. Oh, God. Trevor Veer, I suppose.
Would you give me the designer?
Now, don't be an ass.
Well, it'd be fun. Let's face it. It would be fun.
Don't worry. It won't happen. None of it. The glove, the theatre, the play. It's all a sort of dream. It won't happen.
There you are.
Fate. You take it, Jerry. I can't. Just in case.
Okay.
Hello. Yes. Yes, he's here. Yes, would you hang on a second?
Mr. Greenslade wishes to speak to you. This is it.
All one. Put it away somewhere. I shall not look at it again. Put it away.
Ah, well, thank you. That was a great help to me.
It was very well read.
Peregrine, darling, what can we say? It's all too much, too much.
My dear Peregrine, I like it. I see great possibilities. I look forward with pleasure to creating this pot.
I'm so glad, Mark.
I think it's fabulous. And I like my Mr. W.H.
I am right, aren't I, Perry? Anne Hathaway shouldn't be played unsympathetically. I mean, definitely not a bitch.
She's had a raw deal, of course.
I wonder what Joan Hart did with the gloves.
That was darling. There weren't any gloves, really. Oh, were there, Perry? I mean, is it historical?
No, I'm sorry, Lizzie Love. I was talking inside the play of... Well, out of wishful thinking.
Well, everybody, as you know, I'm not the first dramatist to have a bash at the man from Warwickshire, and I'm sure I won't be the last. Now, you've seen, I hope, what I've tried to do. Show the sort of combustion that built up in that unique personality. His only relief, you might say, has been his love for the boy Hamlet. And the moment when the dark lady pulls the dead child's glove on her hand is the climax of the entire action. Well, I won't elaborate now. I can only hope that we'll discover what it's all about as we work together. And I hope very much that we're all going to agree together. They say dolphins are intelligent, gregarious creatures. Let's be good dolphins and perform well together. Bless you all. Now, let's look at Jeremy Jones's sets, and then it'll be almost time for the party, which the management's kindly laid on to drink a health to our venture. This is a great day.
How are you? Got some champagne?
Yes, thanks. Oh, it's a wonderful play, Perry. I can't get over my luck being in it. Can't get over the dolphin either.
I thought you looked as if you were quite enjoying it. You read Joan Hart exactly right. Now, one wants to feel it's a pity she's Will's sister, because she's the only kind of woman who would suit him as a wife.
I should think before they were both married, she used to let him in by a side window when he came home to Henley Street after a night on the tiles.
Yes, she would. How right you are. Do you like Jeremy's models? Let's go and have a look at them.
I'd love to, only I think Marcus Knight's trying to catch your eye.
Oh.
He looks a bit portentous to me.
Oh, Lord, so he does. Thanks for telling me.
Ah, oh, Perry, I wonder if I should manage to have a word with you.
Oh.
We must have a long talk about your wonderful play. And I mean that, dear boy, your wonderful play.
Thank you, Marco.
Not here, of course, not now. But soon. One other thing, and this in your private ear.
Mm-hmm.
I find with some surprise that we are to have W. Hartley Grove in our company.
I thought he read Mr. W.H. rather well, didn't you?
I could hardly bring myself to listen.
Oh, why?
My dear man. Do you know anything at all about Mr. Harry Grove?
Only that he's a reasonably good actor. Now, for your own information, Marco, and I'd be grateful if you'd keep it very strictly between ourselves, I have had no hand in this piece of casting. It was done at the request of the management. They've been amazingly generous in every other way, and even if I wanted to, I couldn't have opposed them.
But you mean you had this person thrust upon you?
If you like to put it that way.
You should have refused.
I had no valid reason. I do beg you, Marco, not to raise a ruckus at the outset.
You think I'm unreasonable? Allow me to tell you, Perry.
I don't want to listen to any gossip, Marco.
Gossip? My God. Anyone who accuses me of gossip does me an injury I won't stomach. Let me tell you that I know for a fact that Harry Grove is one of the
most... Now, what are you two up to, may I ask? Scandal mongering? Perry, this is an enchanting theatre. I want to see it all. Why don't we have a bacchanal and go in Doric procession through and about the house, tossing down great bumpers of champagne and chanting some madly improper hymn, eh? Led, of course, by our great star.
Excuse me, if you please.
It is offended. See, it stalks away. It dislikes me, you know, intently.
Well, in that case, don't exasperate it, Harry.
Oh, you think better not? It's rather tempting, though, I must say. Still, you're quite right, of course. Apart from anything else, I can't afford to. The great person might give me the sack.
Yes, and if he didn't, I might. Do behave nicely, Harry. No, I must get back into the scrum.
Perry, have you seen Harry Grove anywhere?
I was talking to him a minute ago. Shall I see if I can find him for you, Gertie?
Oh, God, no. I know better than that, I hope. Thank you very much. No doubt he's heavily engaged with our charming leading lady.
It doesn't matter two hoots, darling. It was nothing. Fabulous party. Can't wait to begin work. I see great things in poor Anne, you know.
Oh, Lord, don't say we're going to have that sort of trouble.
What's the matter, Perry? You look worried.
Oh, hello, Emily. No, it's nothing. Just a slight case of director's twitch.
That was poor Gertie, wasn't it? She and Harry Grove are breaking up, you know. I'm afraid she's taking it badly.
Oh, I didn't know. Oh, my God. And if Harry's making a play for destiny, that would explain... Oh, no, I can't worry about that, no. We must just hope for the best. I'm glad I've seen you again, Emily. I was wondering if you'd care to come back to the studio with Jeremy and me for a spot of supper. I think it's about time we made a move.
Yes, I'd like that. Thank you very much.
Good. Well, come on, then. Let's find the Green Slades and say thank you for having us.
Comes hopping up the lane.
Hopping? Where?
Oh, I see.
A lady dressed for riding. Oh, she's lame, Master Will. She's hurt. She can't put her foot to the ground.
She makes a grace of her ungainliness. There's a stain across her face and on her bosom. A raven's feather in a valley of snow.
Mire on her habit, too. She must have fallen.
She's coming in at the gate.
Great God in heaven! How long must this endure? What in the name of all the suffering, cleanse of martyrdom am I expected to do? Look, my author, my producer, my art all tell me that here is a great moment. I should be fed by heaven, fed. My whole being should be lacerated, and so by God it is. But by what? A dribbling, piping peahen. What sort of an actress are you, dear? Are you a woman, dear? Has nobody ever slighted you, deserted you? Have you no conception of the gnawing serpent that ravages a woman scorned? Who's that? Who is it? I demand to know!
Oh, dear, the King Dolphin in a rage. How very entertaining.
Harry, you're supposed to be a professional actor. You're behaving disgracefully. I must ask you to apologize to the company.
To the whole company? Or just to Gertie for laughing about her not being a woman scorn.
Well, this is a deliberate insult. I won't stand for it.
All right. I apologize. Marcus and Gertie, everybody. In 17 plastic and entirely different positions, I will go backstage and be devoured by the worm of contrition. I can't say it was all a mistake and you're not funny, but...
Be quiet. You will certainly go backstage, and I don't want to either see or hear from you until you make your entrance. Is that understood?
Yes. I'm sorry, Perry. I really am.
Never in the entire course of my professional experience have I met with such behavior. It's abominable, inexcusable. I will not put up with it.
I agree. It was very bad. But I'll speak to Harry later, and I promise you it won't happen again.
Yes.
I suggest we break now. Everyone back at 2 o'clock, please, and we'll go on with the rest of Act One.
Charles, my dear boy, just a word in your ear. Now, when the dark lady enters, now turn and move behind the table
towards the door. Oh, Mr. Conducis, I'm so sorry, I didn't see you come in.
If you have a moment to spare, Jane... There's a matter I wish to discuss with you.
Yes, of course, sir. Would you like to come up to the office?
No, thank you. I shall not be long. In reference to the glove and the documents, I am told that their authenticity has now been established.
Yes.
You have based your piece on these objects.
Yes, I have.
I've been going into the matter of promotion, and it occurs to me that the story might be released to coincide with the opening of the theater.
Well, that would certainly be the most wonderful publicity for us.
We might also arrange to display the glove, suitably protected in the foyer.
Ah.
I am taking advice on the question of security from an acquaintance at Scotland Yard, Superintendent Allen.
Oh, yes, well, of course.
I am told that once its existence becomes known, there is likely to be an unprecedented response, especially from the United States.
Yes. Mr. Conducis, I know it's no business of mine, but I can't help asking... Would you feel at all concerned about keeping the glove and the documents here, in this country, I mean?
That is a sentimental approach to a matter of financial consideration. I cannot speak of the historical or nationalistic aspect. I know nothing of such matters. I dislike pale gloves intensely.
Oh, hello, dear boy.
Harry,
I thought you'd gone to lunch.
I just started back to use the phone. What's the matter? Am I interrupting something?
Oh.
There now, a genius for getting myself in the wrong. It's my only talent.
Good morning to you, Grove.
And to you, fairy godfather, patron, and all those things. Have you come to see your very own performing dolphin?
Yes.
Look at Perry. He's struck dumb by my misplaced familiarity.
Not for the first time.
Well, I mustn't double blot my copybook, must I? I do hope you'll be pleased with us, sir. It must be wonderful to have the power to rescue a drowning theatre instead of slapping it under. And you've no personal interest in our disreputable trade, have you?
I have little or no knowledge of it.
No. Like water, it doesn't really mix with oil. Or is it shipping? I always forget. Been doing any more yachting lately? Oh, well, I mustn't go on being a nuisance. Go. Goodbye, sir. See you later, Perry, dear boy.
I am late. I must go. Greenslade will keep you informed of any further developments. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Whew. Wow. Oh, well, you better get some lunch, I suppose.
Governor!
Oh, hello, Jobbins.
Well, it looks a creek, doesn't it?
Lovely.
Different from what it was when you took the plunge.
Well, it does indeed.
Hey, you wouldn't be looking for a watchman, I suppose. Now she's near ready, like, day or night, any time.
Well, I expect we shall want someone, especially now we, Why? Do you know of a good man?
Well, self-praise is no recommendation to what they say, innit?
What, do you mean you take it on?
Yes, that was the idea, Governor. Down a passage in our place, it's too damn for me too, see? Oh, something chronic. I've got good references. There's plenty to speak up for me. Well, how's it strike you? We've a sickening start or favourably?
Well, favourably, I think. Look, why not go round and see our business manager, Mr. Morris? Tell him I sent you.
Oh, thanks, Gov. Thanks a lot.
Mr. Jay?
Yes? Can I help? I'm sorry, I don't think I know.
Superintendent Allen, I was asked to come and check up on your security arrangements.
Oh, yes, of course. I'm so sorry if you've been left hanging about. With the opening tonight, we're rather at sixes and sevens, as you can see.
Well, that's perfectly all right. Don't worry about me. I'll just wander along and have a look, if I may.
Oh, I'll show you. It's up here. The safe's been let into the wall on the half landing, just below the circle foyer.
What a beautiful little theatre this is. What a marvellous job of restoration you've done.
Yes, it's all something in the nature of a dream come true for me.
I should rather think it must be.
Oh, now, here we are. There's a plate glass window, as you can see, with sliding steel panels behind it. The actual door of the safe's on the other side of the wall in the back of the circle.
I see, yes. Well, it's a good safe. All the same, when the steel panels are open, you could have a smash and grab. What about guards and so on?
Oh, we're employing a full-time watchman, a man called Jobbins. He'll be on duty here on the landing from 4 till midnight when his relief comes in. Oh, and Jobbins will sleep on the premises. There's a burglar alarm too, of course, which works from the box office.
You should be all right then. How does the lighting work?
There's a switch inside the safe which works the steel panels. The light comes on automatically when the panels are slid back.
You ought to look very effective. I gather the treasure's being delivered from the museum this morning.
Yes, he should be here any minute now.
Well, I'll wait if I may and see it safely stowed.
I'd be glad if you would. You know, this is quite a surprise to me, the display, I mean. I quite thought Mr. Conducis would take it all back into his iron bosom and lock it away at his Louis the something bureau, and that would be the last we should ever see of Hamlet Shakespeare's glove.
I think I know what you mean.
I can't begin to describe what an extraordinary man he is.
I have met Mr. Conducis.
Do you think him at all dotty or sinister? Or is he just plutocratic?
Well, I was quite unable to classify him, but I'm bound to say I was uncharmed.
Well, when I asked him where he found the treasure, he said at sea. Or just that, at sea. Sounded so odd.
Not in the yacht Calliope, by any chance.
The yacht Calliope? Wait a minute. What is there about the yacht Calliope?
Well, it was his private yacht. It was run down and split in two in a fog off Cape St. Vincent.
Oh, now I remember. Good Lord.
Upstairs, looking at the safe, I think the treasure's arrived.
Oh, I'd better go out and see.
I'll wait for you here. Hello. Where did you spring from?
Do you mind? That's my business. Who are you staring at, if it's not a rude question?
At you.
Know me again, won't you? I do happen to be a member of the company. Trevor Vere.
Where's Superintendent Allen?
Here.
Oh, Beg pardon, I'm sure. You must be the bogey from the yard. What could I have been thinking of? Manners.
Superintendent, this is our manager, Mr. Winter Morris, and Jeremy Jones, who's designed the sets and the costumes for the show.
How do you do?
Nice to meet you.
Shall I go and put the glove in? We're displaying it and the documents in this easel-shaped unit, you see, Superintendent, so it can be seen from below as well as from the circle foyer.
Oh, that's splendid.
Oh, fine. Couldn't be better.
Shall I shut the door then?
Yes.
Twiddle the lock and all?
Yes.
Right. Now, let's have a look. Oh, yeah. Yes, isn't that quite something?
It's perfect, Jack.
I congratulate you, Mr. Jones. You made a beautiful job with the background. Yellow and black, the heraldic colors of a gentleman from Warwickshire.
Yeah.
I reckon any old duck could crack that Peter with his eyes shut.
Now, what are you doing here, Trevor? You're not called.
Just looked in for my mail, Mr. J.
You're not needed now. Much better go home and rest before tonight.
Yes, Mr. J. I wanted to wish you and the play and everybody the most fabulous luck.
Thank you. The time for that is later. Off you go.
Yes, Mr. J.
Dear little mannequin.
Perry, the presser here for shots of the glove with Desi and Marco.
Suppose it won't be too easy with the things so high up.
Well, should we have them down again?
I hope somebody knows how to work the safe. I've locked it, she may remember.
Don't worry, I know. Actually, the great man himself suggested the type of code. It's all done on a word, you see. You think a word of five letters, and each letter stands for a figure. Mr. Conducis thought the most appropriate word would be...
Morris?
Hmm?
Tell me, how long has this safe been in position?
Well, 3 or 4 days. Why?
Have you discussed the lock mechanism with your colleagues?
Well, I... Vaguely, you know, and only vaguely.
Don't you think it would be a good idea if you kept your five-letter word to yourself?
Yes, but I... Well, I mean, we're all...
It's a normal practice, you know, just to persuade you. Is the... combination one of these. Good Lord. If I were you, I'd get a less obvious code word and a new combination and keep them strictly under your Elizabethan bonnet. I very seriously advise you to do so.
Well, that's that. Greenslade, as usual, breaks the news.
What?
The decision. Conducis is going to sell the glove to an American collector.
Oh, no. For heaven's sake, he's lousy with money. He's got so much, it can't have any meaning anymore. Why can't he give it away? Let him give William Shakespeare's handwriting and Hamlet Shakespeare's glove to Stratford or the V&A. Let him give them to the nation.
Let him do this, let him do that. He'll do exactly what he wants.
But you have to see him, Perry. I mean, after all, he's got a good thing out of you and the Dolphin. Capacity business for 6 months, booked out weeks ahead, massive prestige, a lot.
And the company of Kilkenny cats, as far as good relations are concerned. Destiny waltzing over to Haddy Grove and... Gertie and Marco reacting like
fury. You're all right. You've got a strong thing going with Emily. I don't see what you've got to worry about. You've got to wade into Conducis.
I can't.
Why not, for heaven's sake?
Oh, Jerry, I've told you. He gives me the willies. I just can't go hat in hand asking him for anything. I know how you feel about the treasure and keeping it here and everything. And I agree with
then
you.
Then do something about
it. Oh, it wouldn't be any good. I did try when he came to the Dolphin. And got slapped right down for my trouble. I won't do it again.
Well, if you won't, I will.
Oh, you wouldn't get to first
place. I'll stage a sit-down on his doorstep.
Oh, will you carry a bag?
If necessary, I'll carry a sledgehammer.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. That's a damn silly way to talk, and you know it.
Well, look, I may have been a trifle hasty.
I do sympathize, you know.
I'm not really contemplating a sit-in. In fact, on the whole, I believe it would be superfluous.
Now, look.
No, it's all right. Let's think no more about it.
All right, if you say so. I may as well mention that the things are to be removed on Monday and replaced by a blown-up photograph.
Where are they going?
To Greenslade's office for the time being. Apparently the customer's hell-bent on getting them.
Well, really,
I just do not understand you. Good night, Marco. Gertie. I should go out through the front. There's a lot of puddles by the stage door.
Well, I'll go on in and fetch it if you really want me to, Desi.
Oh, yes, do, darling. Don't be too long,
though. I won't. See you later then, Angel. Good night, Perry.
Good night, Harry.
Hello. Didn't know you were still here.
I was waiting for you. Emmy, would you come and have supper at that new bistro in Wallfinger's Lane?
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Marvellous. Stop raining, I think. Anyway, it's no distance.
I always think an empty theatre feels so strange. As if it had a life of its own.
Mm.
can always imagine it breathes.
What was that?
It sounded like a seat flapping up.
Yes, it did, rather.
Hasn't everybody gone?
I thought so. Wait here a moment.
Where are you going?
Not far, just to have a look.
All right.
Hello? Anybody there? Jobbins?
Oh, there you go. Anything up?
I heard a seat flap in front.
Oh, did you now?
Good Lord, are you going to the dogs or Brighton races or what? Where's your brown bowler?
Pardon the dishy bill. Present this here coat was, and very welcome. It gets chilly between now and the witching hour when my relief comes in. Now, what's this about a seat?
Well, I heard something. It sounded like a seat.
Now then, come on out of it. Well, come on, you heard.
What goes on?
It's all right, love, won't be long.
What does go on? You sound as if you're used to this.
Which I am. It's a perishing child wonder. That's what it is. He'd done it before and he'd do it again. And once too often.
Done what?
Hangs about. His mum plays a steel guitar in a cave, see, just across the river. She knocks off at 11 and her heart's delight sallies forth to greet her. He fills in the time hanging around the theatre, trying to make out he's a robber or a spectrum. Isn't it marvellous?
I'll get that little so-and-so.
Oh, you never catch him, Gub. He'd be halfway up the lane by now and going strong. His mum meets him at the top. When she's sober, that is.
I'll have the hide off him on Monday. All right, Jobbins. I'll see you not pestered again. And anyway, as far as the treasure's concerned, this is your last watch.
That's right, sir. Positively the last appearance in this epoch-making club.
It was great fun, Perry. Thank you so much. It's a lovely supper.
Oh, Lord, it's pouring again. We'll never get a taxi in this.
Well, it may not last.
I tell you what, I've got a brolly and a Mac in the office. Let's run down the hill, get Jobbins up and collect them.
All right.
Come on, then. Mind you don't slip.
Listen. Hmm? Someone else is running in the rain.
In the stage door alley.
There it is. What? Who is it, Perry? Can you see?
It's Hawkins, the relief watchman.
Mr. Jay, for God's sake.
What's the matter? What is it? What's happened?
Oh, my God, it's murder, Mr. Jay. Murder, that's what's happened.
Murder? Well, what do you mean? For God's sake, man, put yourself together. Who's been murdered?
Perry Jobbins, that's who. His head's all bashed in, oh, God, Mr. Jay. His head's all bashed in.
Emily, where are you?
Yes. All right, I'm here. Oh.
This is a horrible business, Emmy.
I heard what you said on the phone.
The police will be here almost at once.
Is it murder?
I can't be sure. It was one of those bronze dolphins, you know, on the pedestals in the circle foyer. It had been overturned and cracked his head open like an egg. We must be calm and collected. All the things people like us are supposed not to be.
Yes, that's right. Well, so we will.
Yes. Oh, I ought to ring Greenslade. He ought to be told.
I should wait till the police get here.
Yes. Listen.
What is it?
I don't know. But there's something down there in the centre aisle. I must go and look.
Careful, Perry.
Yes, all right. You stay here. Oh, Trevor. It's Trevor.
He badly hurt?
I don't know. He's alive, but he isn't conscious. What should we do? Ring the yard again? An ambulance or what?
Don't move him. I'll ring for an ambulance.
Listen, sirens.
I'll ring just the same.
I'll just take a look at this body.
Sergeant, may I go back to the boy? In case he comes to and he's frightened. I know him.
Yes, good idea, Miss...
Dunn. Emily Dunn.
Miss Dunn. Members of the company here, are you?
Yes, we were at the new restaurant in Warfinger's Lane and came back to shelter from the rain.
I see. Right then, Miss Dunn. You wait in there with the boy. Oh, and to tell the ambulance men all you can, will you?
Yes.
Now, Mr. J.
Yes, I'll show you. If you don't mind, I won't look. It's terrible. I'm sorry to balk. This way.
What, up the stairs? Now, don't trouble to come up again, Mr. J. The less traffic you know, the better we like it.
Yes, of course, I forgot.
If you'll just stay here.
Yes, thank you.
God, the treasure!
Oh, just a minute, sir, if you don't mind.
The glove, the letter and the glove. I must see...
All right, sir, all right. You can't go up there yet, you know. If you're referring to the contents of that glass-tin cabinet, I can tell you right away. It's been opened from the back, and they've gone.
Superintendent Allen, thank God you've come.
This is no good at all, is it? What are you two doing here?
We got here just after...
You look as if you'd better go and sit down somewhere. I won't keep you any longer than I must. Inspector Fox and I'll have a look around and talk to this man Hawkins and discover the body. And then I hope we'll know more where we stand.
I ought to be in hospital. I ought to be home in bed getting looked after.
All right, Hawkins. I know you've had a nasty shock and you're feeling rotten. But you see, you're the chap who can help us.
Don't give me that. Oh, no, what you lot mean when you talk about help. Next thing it'll be the usual bloody warning.
No, it won't. Now, listen. We'll just go over it once more to make sure I've got it right, and then you can go home. You arrived at the theatre just after midnight.
About 5 past.
And let yourself in by the stage door using your own key. Then what?
Well, I locked the door behind me and shot the bolt. Then I shouted out to Mr. Joppins to let him know I'd arrived, see?
Yes?
Well, I went through to the front of the house. There was a bit of light in a circle. He was standing up there wearing his flash new coat. He gave me quite a turn.
Joppins was? You didn't tell us that before.
You never asked me.
All right. Go on.
Well, I said, is that you, Anne? And he says, who do you think it is? And I said, I was sorry I was a bit late and should have made the tea. And he says, yes. So I went back to the props room and made it.
How long would that take?
Well, it's an old electric jug. It's a bit slow. Well, I took it round to the foyer and up the stairs and Oh, God.
All right, never mind. That'll do for now. Just give your address to Inspector Fox and we'll send you home in a car. Yes, Sergeant, what is it? What have you got there?
We've been searching, as instructed, sir, and found these. 7th row of the stalls, about 6 feet from where the boy was lying. A kind of black velvet easel affair, an old glove, and 2 little bits of writing. Would they be what was wanted?
Oh, yes, indeed they would. Thank you very much, Sergeant. That was good work.
Thank you, sir. Oh, and there's a Mr. Greenslade outside, sir, asking for you.
Right, I'll come straight away.
Surely that is the explanation, my dear Allen. The boy banged the door to suggest he'd gone, but actually stayed hidden in the theatre. Then, having somehow learnt the number of the combination, robbed the safe. He was caught in the act by Jobbins, who must have seen him from the half landing. As Jobbins made for him, the boy, possibly by accident, overturned the pedestal and the dolphin. He must have run back into the circle, run too fast in his panic, and fallen into the stalls, letting go of the easel with the glove and the documents which fell with him.
Well, as a theory, Mr. Greenslade, it has its attractions. It's tidy, it's simple. And it means all we have to do is to sit back and hope for the boy to recover consciousness and health so that we can send him up for manslaughter.
Well, what I don't quite see... I'm sorry.
No, go on.
Why should the boy come out into the circle foyer where he'd be bound to be seen by Jobbins? Why not go down by the other staircase and let himself out by the stage door?
He might have wanted to show off. Might be any number of reasons. What do you say, Allen?
Well, the traces we found on the vervet balustrade of the circle can't really be reconciled with a nosedive into the stalls. However, I can relate them, and the boy's injuries, to a blow on the jaw, a fall across the balustrade, a lift, a sidelong drag, and a drop. Also, if the boy is the thief and killer, who unshot the bolts and unslipped the iron bar on the little pass door on the main front entrance? Who left the key in the lock and pulled the door shut from the outside?
Did someone do that?
That's how the police found it.
I never noticed that. Jobbins would have bolted the door and dropped the bar after everyone had gone. I think he kept the key in the corner beyond the box office. No, doesn't add up.
You didn't actually see the boy, did you?
No, I only heard him catcall and bang the stage door.
And there's nothing else you can tell us?
Well, not as far as I can think. I've got a sort of notion there's something I've forgotten, some detail.
To do with what? Any idea?
Well, the boy, I think... Something about a production of the Cherry Orchard. Yeah, it's gone. Don't suppose it matters.
What action do you propose to take now, Allen?
Oh, the usual routine, and very tedious it's likely to be. I should like to see all the members of the cast and the theatre staff during the day. If no one objects, I shall ask them to come here to the Dolphin. It'll save time.
Yes, of course.
Well, if there's nothing more one can do, you know where I am if you need me.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Greenslade. Good night.
Good night, dear Alan. Good night, Jane. Good night, Fox.
Nice.
No doubt we'll be in touch.
Good night. Well, at least there's one saving grace in all this horror.
Yes.
Oh, yes. If the glove had been lost, I really think I should have gone completely bonkers. You will take care of it.
Great care.
Good night, Superintendent. Good night, Inspector.
Good night.
Good night.
What's up, Mr. Allen? Anything wrong?
Oh, my dear Brer Fox, I'm afraid so. I'm afraid there's no saving grace in this catastrophe after all. But Peregrine Jay.
Now, Miss Bracey, I think that you and Mr. Knight left the theatre together.
Yes.
And you went out together through the front door.
No. Mr. Knight was calling on the management.
I looked into the office on a matter of business.
To see Mr. Morris?
Yes. Marco, Mr. Knight and I had a drink together and left about 10 minutes later. Jobbins came after us, and I heard him drop the bar across and shoot the bolts.
My God.
Yes. The burglar alarm. He'd switched it on when he locked up. Why didn't it work?
Because someone had switched it off.
Oh.
And you went home in your car, Miss Bracey, which was parked in the bomb site next to the theatre.
Yes.
Did you notice any other cars belonging to the company still parked there?
Oh, well, yes, I saw your car, Marcus. Charlie'd gone, I think.
Any others? Miss Meads, for instance?
Oh, there. Yes, indeed. Draw nothing glossy state under the portico.
Destiny uses a hire service, don't you, love?
Any other cars, Miss Bracey? Mr. Morrissey's?
There, parked at the back and rather in the dark.
I understand that Miss Blunt and Mr. Jay didn't have cards at the theatre.
Oh, I haven't got one anyway.
I left mine at home.
Where it remained, unless Mr. Jones took it out?
Which I didn't. I was at home working all evening.
Alone?
Entirely.
So that leaves only Mr. Grove. Did you notice Mr. Grove's car in the bomb site, Miss Brayson?
Oh, yes. I saw that one.
You know it quite well?
Know it? Yes, I know it. Well, you may say I used to.
You don't think well, perhaps, Mr. Grove's car.
Oh, there's nothing the matter with the car.
Darling, what an infallible ear you have for inflection. Did you go to Raleigh?
This is the wrong occasion, in my opinion, for mistimed comedy.
Of course, I do so agree. But when is the right occasion?
Shall we press on? I'm sure you all see the point of this car business.
Well, I...
Yes, Miss Meads?
I didn't mean to interrupt. I don't quite understand.
What don't you understand, Miss Meads?
Well, it's just that everybody's saying that Trevor, who is rather a horrid little boy, stole the treasure and killed poor Jobbins. So one wonders why it should matter so much when we all left last night.
It's a little early yet to reach a hard and fast conclusion, you know. However, I think we have now established that Mr. Random left first by the stage door. Miss Bracey, followed by Mr. Knight and Mr. Morris through the front entrance. Then Mr. Grove, Miss Mead, and a party of friends. And finally, Mr. Jay and Miss Dunn, all by the stage door. Now, did any of you, at any time after the fall of the curtain, see or speak to Trevor Vere?
I did, of course. He dressed with me.
Did he ever talk about the treasure, Mr. Random?
Oh, well, yes. He flaunts away about how, well, any fool could guess the combination.
Hinting that he had, in fact, guessed it.
Yes.
And did he tell you what it was?
He did not. If he had, I shouldn't have paid any attention. Don't believe for a moment that he knew it.
I seem to remember that I advised Mr. Morris to make the five-letter key group rather less predictable. Was it ever changed?
Well, no. I was going to, but then when we knew the things would be taken away, I'm afraid I never quite got round to it.
But I imagine you must all at some time have speculated about the keyword or discussed it.
Well, of course we discussed it. Everyone thought the five-letter word must be glove. But as far as I could see, that didn't get one any nearer than a five-figure number.
Oh, darling, Desi, I do adore you. Better than life itself.
Yes, well, you all thought that glove was the likely word, and so indeed it was. Did anyone arrive at the combination itself? Yes, Mr. Randall?
Well, actually, I've always been rather interested in codes. I have to do a lot of waiting about in my dressing room, and I thought I'd try to work it out.
And you got, from the word glove?
49696, or alternatively, 42596, which seemed more likely as there are no repeated figures. But, of course, there are a number of variants in this type of code. I may have been all wrong.
Tell me, are you and the boy in the same scenes?
Yes, and I didn't leave any notes about that Trevor could have read.
Did you tell anyone of your solution?
No, I did not. I discussed it with nobody. I need hardly point out that if I'd tried to steal the treasure, I wouldn't have told you all this. But I am quite certain Trevor didn't know the combination, and consequently that he did not open the safe or kill Henry Jobbins.
I suppose you realize the implications of what you're saying, Charles.
I think so.
Then I must say you've got a very odd notion of loyalty to your colleagues.
I may be very dense, but I can't see where this pronouncement of Charles's leads us. If it seems to be established, the boy never left the theater. And if the theater was locked up and only old Hawkins had the key to the stage door, then how the hell did a third person get in?
That, Mr. Knight, is what we now have to consider.
Might it have been someone in the audience who stayed behind? You know, Lurk.
The ushers, the commissionaire, Jobbins and the ASM did a thorough search front and back after every performance.
Well, I think we've gone as far as we usefully can in joint discussion. Mr. J, I expect you want to make your arrangements with the company.
Oh, may I? Thank you. There'll be a rehearsal for Trevor's understudy tomorrow morning, chaps. Sorry. Everyone concerned.
I wondered if I could have a word with you, Mr. Allen, about the matter in hand.
Yes, of course. Shall we go into the office? Now, Mr. Grove, what can we do for you?
Well, it's just that I've remembered something. It may not be important, but it's rumored that when Jobbins was found, he was wearing a light overcoat.
Yes?
Was it a rather large brown and white check?
It was.
Loudish, one might say?
One might indeed.
Yes, well, I gave him that coat on Friday evening.
Your name is still on the inside pocket tag.
The wind, to coin a phrase, has departed from my sails. I'm sorry, Mr. Allen. Exit actor looking crestfallen.
No, wait a bit.
Huh?
Did anyone know about this?
Well, I suppose the man Hawkins did, but I asked Jobbins not to say anything. Everybody had been most amusing about that coat. In an okay, hearty, public school sort of way, you know. I was beginning to find the comedy line a trifle irksome.
By the way, I gather you went to a party at Miss Mead's flat in Chelsea last night.
Yes, that's right. But she'd commanded me to fetch my guitar, and I let off home to Canonbury first to get it.
Did you arrive in Chelsea before or after Miss Mead and her other guests?
Almost a dead heat. I was parking as they arrived. They'd been to the little joint in Worthing's Lane, I understand.
Did anyone see or hear you at your own flat in Canonbury?
The man in the flat upstairs may have heard me. He complains that I wake him every night. Oh, the phone rang while I was in the loo. Wrong number. That would have been soon after 11.
To get back to your overcoat for a moment, you're sure nobody else knew that you'd given it to Jobbins?
Well, yes, pretty sure. Jobbins was pleased as punch, poor old donkey.
You liked him, didn't you?
He was a good bloke. We used to have a pint at the pub sometimes, and he'd talk about his days on the river. Oddly enough, I think he quite liked me.
Why should that be so odd?
Oh, I'm hideously unpopular, you know. I have a talent for rousing extremes of antipathy. Even Mr. Conducius, although he feels obliged to be helpful, quite hates my guts, I assure you.
You've seen him lately?
Friday afternoon.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, I call on him from time to time as a matter of duty. After all, he got me this job. Did I mention that we're distantly related?
No, you didn't.
No. I don't mention it very much. Even I draw the line somewhere.
I asked you to come in, Mr. Jones, because I think that you may have something to tell us about the glove which was taken from the safe last night.
Yes. Yes, all right. I know what you're going to say, but I swear it's got nothing to do with Jobbins or the boy.
Well, that, of course, is our chief concern at the moment.
What's up? What's going on? Here! Who's been manhandling Hamnet's glove?
It's not Hamnet's glove. It's a bloody good fake.
What?
I ought to know. I did it.
Oh, Jerry, you fool. You unutterable idiot.
You want to tell us about it, Mr. Jones?
Yes. Yes, I'd better. Well, it began when I was making the property gloves. I turned out a mass of tat looking for material, and I came across this glove. It's genuine as far as the age goes. It's a small woman's hand, but... Now, the embroidery was quite different. I don't know, I suppose I got sort of besotted about it. I got a maggot about historic treasures going out of their native setting, and there was a lot of talk about Conducius planning to sell to an American collector.
What did you intend to do with your copy, ultimately?
I don't know. I thought I might do a sort of leg pull. The day the real glove was delivered here, I had my fake with me, and I thought I'd try it out, see if anyone could tell the difference. It was quite easy. Making a switch, I mean.
Very quaint. You ought to go into business with Harry Grove.
Well, then I heard all that chat about the safe and the code, and I thought, this is terrifying. It's asking for trouble. So absolutely on the spur of the moment, I decided not to tell. I, I decided to leave the copy on show and take charge of the original. It's in a safe deposit. It's very carefully packed. It's all right, I promise you.
So now I suppose I understand your extraordinary behavior last Friday. You must have gone raving bloody mad.
All right, you needn't tell me what I've done. Virtually, I've stolen the glove.
Virtually? There's no virtually about it. That is precisely what you've done. Do I understand that you then decided to keep the real glove and let the collector spend a fortune on a fake?
I don't know. Well, if this thing hadn't happened, I don't know now what I'd have done. I expect I'd have changed them around again when the transfer was made. I expect I would. I just do not know.
What else could you have done? Hoarded the real glove for the rest of your life? Or did you mean to flog it on the freak black market? Do you know there is such a market?
Yes, I do.
Oh, for God's sake, Jerry, shut up.
No, I won't. Why should I? I'm not the only one who knows about Mrs. Constantia Guzman.
Mrs. Constantia Guzman.
She's a slightly mad millionaireess with a flair for antiquities.
Yes?
Well, according to Harry Grove, Mrs. Guzman, who was over 50, ugly as sin and terrifying, fell madly in love with Marco Knight when he was in New York about 3 years ago.
Go on.
Well, apparently, she keeps a collection of objets d'art, all of them hot as hell, just to gloat over in secret. And she showed them to Marco as a sort of woo. Marco got on quite well with Harry in those days, and he told him all about it one evening when he'd had a few drinks.
Has anyone else in the company heard about this?
Oh, most of them, I should think. It's one of Harry's best stories.
I see. Well, Mr. Jones, you'll be required to go to your safe deposit with two police officers and hand the glove over to them. You will then be asked to sign a full statement about your remarkable goings-on. Whether a charge will be laid, I can't at the moment tell you.
Yes. All right.
Just wait a moment, will you, Jay? Fox, lay that on, please.
Yes, Mr. Allen. If you'll come with me, Mr. Jones.
I gather that young boob is a friend of yours.
Yes.
Well, if it's any comfort to you, I believe his story. I do not think that he robbed the safe last night or that he killed Jobbins. Now, have you any idea who the American customer for the treasure is?
No.
Not Mrs. Constantia Guzman, by any chance?
I don't know. Mr. Conducist may not even know her.
I think he does. She was one of his guests on the Calliope at the time of the disaster. One other thing. Do you happen to know what the obligation is that Grove appears to have laid upon Conducist?
Not a notion.
Can you tell me anything about his background? Grove's, I mean.
Not much. He refers to himself with an noble stallion. Don't for a moment suppose it's true. He once told me that he was out of work for so long that he got jobs as a lorry driver, a waiter, a steward, and so on. That was before he had his big break in cellar stairs.
When was that?
Oh, about 6 years ago, I think.
Look, I'm going to ask you to do something for me, if you will. I wonder if you'd take an hour to think back over your various encounters with Mr. Caduceus and your adventures last night and note down everything you can remember. Could you let me have it as soon as it's ready?
Yes, all right. Where will you be?
Oh, here for another hour, I should think. Then wherever developments take me. We'll leave a police constable on duty in the theatre and he can take a message if I've gone. Well, Brer Fox, we've caught a snarled-up little job this time, haven't we?
We have that. It'd be nice if we could put it down to simple theft, discovery, and violence.
It'd be lovely. But we can't, you know. One thing, the theft of a famous object is always bedeviled by the fact of its being indisposable through the usual channels.
So you've got either a crank who steals and gloats, or a crank of the type of young Jones,
or a kidnapper who holds the stuff to ransom.
Hmm.
And you might have a non-professional thief who knows about this Mrs. Guzman and believes she'll play and you make a packet.
That seems to have taken the entire boiling of this lot.
Added to which, I suppose you've noticed that according to Hawkins, we've got the fact that our customer apparently opened the safe, killed Jobbins, half-killed the boy, unbolted, unbarred, and unlocked the pass door, and slung his hook. All during the 5 minutes or so it took Hawkins to brew up.
Yeah. Well, it's impossible. I'll say that for it. It's impossible.
Not really, you know. You saw the body. Don't you remember how the coat was? Bunched up and stuffed under the small of the back. Couldn't have got like that by him falling in it.
Damn, I missed that one. It's an easy one, too. Well, if only that kid could recover his wits, we'd all know where we were.
We might, but concussion's a tricky business.
What do we do about Mr. Jeremy Jones?
What indeed? I think we take delivery of the glove, give him hell and go no further. Well, come on, Fox. I don't think there's much we can usefully do here. We'll make a call at the hospital. Then we'll see what Peregrine J. has remembered for us.
I think that's the lot.
What I did in the holes. Keep it bright, brief, and descriptive.
It's far from brief. I seem to have done an unconscionable lot.
Sure you haven't forgotten the one apparently trifling clue around which the whole mystery revolves?
Oh, you're very jokey, aren't you? Oh, I'm not sure at all. The near-drowning incident's complete, I think, but I don't know about the visit to Curzon Street. Of course, I was plastered by the time it was over. How extraordinary it was. Really was odd. Do you know, darling, it seems to me now as if he acted under some kind of compulsion.
What did he do that was so odd?
Well, there was an old menu card from the yacht Calliope. It was in the box under the treasure, and he snatched it away and he tore it up.
I suppose if your yacht's been wrecked under your feet, you don't much enjoy being reminded of it.
No, but I got the impression it went deeper than that. Now, there's another thing to do with last night, during that rumpus over Trevor. There were the catcalls, the door slamming, and something else. Oh, damn, I wish I could think.
Well, don't try and remember, then perhaps you will.
I can remember thinking about the cherry orchard. One of those momentary back-of-the-mind things. And there was a quotation running through my head afterwards. Vanished with a something perfume and... Wait a minute, I've got it.
What?
Vanished with a something perfume and a faint melodious twang. Just before the cat calls, there was a twanging noise. Oh, well, it's a relief to have remembered. Anyway, I'll put it in. Then we'd better ring up the theatre and find out where Alan's got to.
Hello?
What's up? That's a Roger. I haven't done nothing.
You're all right. You had a fall.
You're the super.
Yes, that's right. We've met before.
Yeah. Where, though?
In the Dolphin. Upstairs in the Circle.
In the Circle?
Things happen up there, don't they?
You could say that again. All over the house.
You had old jobbins, guessing?
Then that's no error.
What did you do?
We made like spooks, see?
Anything else?
Ping!
How did you do it? Just like that with your mouth?
You mind? My mum plays the old steely. Hey, was that when I got knocked out or something?
That was a bit later. You had a fall. Can you remember what happened after you banged the stage door?
No. Not a thing. I was concussed. The doc says I was very badly concussed. Where did I fall, Super? What's the story?
You fell into the stalls.
Would you mind?
It's true.
Into the stalls. Cripes! Why?
That's what I want to find out.
Well, I don't know. I blacked out. I can't remember.
Never mind. Go back to sleep again. Some of the company will be coming to see you tomorrow. They may only stay a few minutes, but they'd like to say hello.
Okay. I'm tired now, though. Do me a favor and pack it in, will you?
What's your idea about these visits, then, Mr. Allen?
We'll arrange them for tomorrow, about noon. We'll get Peregrine J. to call the actors and fix the timetable. He can tell them the truth, that the boy can't remember what happened, and it's hoped that encounters with the rest of the cast may set up some chain of association that could lead to a recovery of memory.
One of them won't fancy that idea.
No, but it wouldn't do to refuse.
The nerve might crack. There might be a bolt. We can't tell with that sort of temperament. Still, we're well provided.
Well, Brer Fox, the next thing we've got to do is to talk to Mr. Conducis, and it's going to be tricky.
Yeah, he's a rum sort of character, isn't he?
Exceedingly rum. Cold fish. And yet, not an insensitive fish. No indication of any background, apart from wealth, or of any particular race. He carries a British passport. He inherited one fortune and made Lord knows how many more. He spent most of his life abroad, a lot of it in the Calliope. She was cut in half under his feet. That was 6 years ago.
Yeah, perhaps it's left him a bit funny for keeps.
Perhaps. Jay's account of his behaviour that morning.
Hell's boots and gaiters.
Well, what's all that about?
A hunch.
You mean...
No, just a hunch. Ah, we'll see. Incidentally, you went over all the properties in the theatre, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
No... musical instruments?
None.
Well, it's time we set out for Curzon Street. I'm going to cling to Peregrine J.'s notes, as Mr. C. was reported to have clung to his raft.
I still don't know what line we're going to take exactly.
We let him dictate it to begin with. Come on.
I am perfectly ready to help you, Superintendent. And only regret that I am unlikely to be able to do so. I've had virtually no personal contact with the management of the Dolphin or the company.
With the exception, perhaps, of Mr. Grove.
He was already known to me.
I understand you're related.
A distant connection.
Mr. Caduceus, I'm afraid I must ask you to talk about something which may be painful to you. I want you to tell me about the Calliope and the disaster. That was 6 years ago, wasn't it?
Yes.
You tell Mr. J, I believe, that you bought the Shakespeare relics 6 years ago.
Yes.
Had you this treasure on board the yacht?
Why should you think so?
Because Jay found under the glove the menu for a dinner in the Calliope. He thinks it was headed Villefranche.
I bought the relics from a person in the yacht.
Who was this person, if you please?
I've forgotten.
Forgotten?
The name. He was a member of the ship's complement. He asked to see me and showed me the little writing desk. I understand it had been given him by the proprietors of some lodging house. I thought the contents certainly worthless, but I gave him what he asked for them.
Which was?
£30.
What became of this man?
He drowned.
How did it come about that the desk and its contents were saved?
I had it on deck. I'd shown it as a matter of curiosity to some of my guests.
Did Mrs. Constantia Guzman see it, perhaps?
Perhaps.
Was she interested?
She is a collector.
Did she make an offer?
She did. I was not inclined to sell.
Why do you dislike pale gloves, Mr. Caduceus?
I have no idea what you mean.
You tell Peregrine Jay that you dislike them.
But personal prejudice, I cannot account for it.
Mr. Caduceus, are you ill?
No. You insist on questioning me about an episode which distressed me, which was painful, tragic.
I would avoid it if I could. I'm afraid I must go further. Will you tell me exactly what happened at the moment of the disaster?
There was a fog. The yacht collided with a tanker. There was a fire, oil on the water. I was on deck. I slid down onto the raft, which was in the swimming pool.
Still with the little desk?
Yes, it was under my arm. I lay on the raft with the desk beneath me. I was badly bruised. That is all. We were picked up by the tanker.
Were there other people on the raft?
I believe so. I was told so.
Pretty hazardous, I should have thought. It wouldn't accommodate more than how many?
I don't know.
Mr. Caduceus, when you saw Peregrine Jay's gloved hand clinging to the edge of that hole in the stage of the Dolphin and heard him cry out that he would drown if you didn't save him, were you reminded...
No, be quiet, be quiet. You've told them, you betrayed me. I wish to God I'd killed you.
This is infamous. I absolutely refuse to take part in a dangerous and unwanted experiment. I am an artist.
Isn't he superb? Honestly, you have to hand it to him. Oh, hello, Mr. Allen. Is it true that this is a sort of identification parade?
You could put it like that, I suppose.
Well, do you mean that this unfortunate but nauseating little boy may suddenly point his finger at one of us and enunciate in ringing tones, "It all comes back to me. He done it."
That roughly is the idea.
Well, then I freely confess it terrifies me.
Well, come inside and get it over.
All right. As long as you know that he's quite capable of putting on a false show of recovery, smartly followed by a still falser accusation. Especially in my case, when he knows it would draw loud cheers and much laughter from all hands and the cook.
We'll have to risk it. In you go.
Well, he looks as if he was quite a nice little boy, didn't he? You'd say butter wouldn't melt, huh? Is he really asleep, or is it an act?
He's dozing. If you just lean over him, he'll wake.
It seems a damn shame, I must say.
All the same, I'll ask you to do it, if you will. There's a bruise on the cheek which mystifies us. Have a look, see if you've any ideas. His hair's fallen across it. Move it back and have a look. I think it's only fair to give you all some explanation. These, as I believe, are the facts about Saturday night. Grove left the theatre, telling Miss Mead he'd go home and collect his guitar. He had, in fact, brought his guitar to the theatre and hidden it in the props room, where it was found by Trevor in the course of his illicit explorations. Grove got into his car, drove round the block, parked out of sight in Phipps Passage, and re-entered the theatre by the pass door in the front entrance.
But it was bolted.
Well, this was before Mr. Knight and Mr. Morris left, while they were having a drink in the office.
Oh, I see.
It was your remembering that scrap of evidence, Jay, that made me begin to wonder whether Grove had brought his guitar to the theatre and not gone to Canonbury. He remained hidden throughout the rumpus over Trevor until, as he thought, the Dolphin was deserted apart from Jobbins. Soon after 11, he dialed his own number and let it ring just long enough for his neighbour to hear it and suppose it had been answered. He then retrieved the guitar and left it by the front door. He switched off the burglar alarm and returned to the circle by the back staircase to wait. All this time, Trevor peeps, follows, and spies. Just before midnight, Jobbins left his post by the treasure to make his routine calls to police and fire. Grove left his hiding place and, using a torch, opened the safe.
Then he did know the combination?
Yes. During the period after the safe was installed and before the treasure arrived, it was not guarded. I think he may have done a bit of experimenting after hours on the possible glove combination.
Oh, God.
He removed the display stand and the contents, inadvertently touching the switch that operates the steel panels and the interior lighting. It was at this point that Trevor, who'd stolen quite close, just as he did to me when I was looking at the safe, jumped out with one of his spook noises. Grove bolted into the circle foyer, clutching his loot, only to find Jobbins rushing upstairs towards him. He pushed the Dolphin pedestal over and down. As Jobbins fell, Trevor came out of the circle and screamed. Grove made for him, caught him in the front row, and after a brief struggle, during which the treasurer went overboard, precipitated the boy into the stalls. The last thing Trevor remembers now is Grove's face close to his own. It was the sight of it this morning, together with a single twang affected by Inspector Fox, modestly concealed behind the screen, that bridged the gap in his memory.
Of course, it's a single plangent note that brings down the curtain in the cherry orchard.
What the hell are you talking about?
I'll just finish the story. Grove heard Hawkins at the stage door and knew he'd come straight into the front. So he returned to the body, dressed in his own outlandish coat. He strips off the coat and re-enters the darkened circle, to all intents and purposes, Jobbins. Hawkins goes backstage to make the tea. Grove then had time to bundle the body back into the coat, collect his guitar, and let himself out by the front entrance. He arrived at Miss Mead's party fully equipped to be the life and soul of it.
At what?
Oh, never mind, my darling, never mind. You must rise above it. We must try to forget.
The motive, of course, was theft. Harry Grove knew a great deal about Mrs. Constantia Guzman. He knew if the treasure was stolen, she'd give a fortune under the counter for it. But he knew more about her than that. She was a guest of Mr. Conducius in the Calliope when the yacht was wrecked. You see, at that time, 6 years ago, Grove was going through a bad patch, taking any jobs he could get. Lorry driving, waiter, steward. I was about to ask you yesterday, sir, when Grove himself interrupted us. Was he a steward on board the Calliope?
Yes.
How did that come about?
He brought himself to my notice. His father was a distant and unsatisfactory connection of mine.
And he sold you the glove and the documents?
Yes.
For £30.
I have already said so.
Well, I won't keep you any longer. I'm taking an unorthodox line when I tell you that Grove has said he will not contest the accusations of assault. He will, he says, admit taking the treasure and plead that his subsequent actions were instinctive and self-protective. If he sticks to this defense, it will mean a short trial, with little evidence being called.
Why is he doing that? Why isn't he going all out for an acquittal?
I asked him that, Miss Jay. He said he was suddenly sick of the whole thing, and that he thought it would work out better that way for William Shakespeare and the Dolphin.
Superintendent, I will pay for Grove's defense. Let him know that.
Very well.
Has he said anything about me?
Very little. But he asked me to give you a message. He said you owed each other nothing. He also said that as far as he was concerned, this was his phrase, he would keep the glove over his knuckles. And I could tell you so.
Yes. He clung to the raft and tried to climb aboard. He would have overturned it. I smashed his knuckles with the writing desk and thought I'd drowned him. His hands were gloved. They curled and opened and slid away in their own blood. Nobody saw. He has blackmailed me ever since.
They're not canceling, and there's their little publicity. I can't understand it.
Could it be the hand of Conducis?
Could be. Didn't somebody say power corrupts? It may do, but it comes in handy, dear boy. It comes in handy.
All the same, you know, Emmy, I hope it's not the hand of Conducis. I hope it's the dolphin and us. You know, I'm sure he stayed behind to unburden himself to Alan.
What of? Oh,
goodness knows. But I've got a feeling it was to do with his yacht. He behaved so oddly whenever it came up.
Perhaps you reminded him of it that morning.
How?
Oh, people drowning, you know. Hanging onto bits of wreckage. Perhaps he was glad he rescued you or something.
Well, so he should be. Well, let's forget about him now. Come on. I'm going to buy you a really extravagant lunch, and then we're going to look at some engagement rings.
In Death of the Dolphin, the novel by Naya Marsh, adapted by Alison Plowden, Detective Superintendent Allen was played by Peter Howell. Perry Jay by David Vella. Mr. Conducis by Malcolm Hayes. Harry Grove by Frank Duncan. Jobbins, Bruce Beebe. Jeremy Jones, Anthony Hall. Greenslade, Gerald Cross. Marcus Knight, Victor Lucas. Destiny Mead, Sonia Fraser. Gertie Bracey, Betty Bascom. Emily Dunn, Patricia Gallimore. Charles Random, Leslie Heritage. Trevor Veer, David Howe. Winter Morris, John Gabriel. Hawkins, Patrick Towle. Sergeant Hector Ross. Inspector Fox, Edward Kelsey. The play was produced by Betty Davis.
Well, I wonder if you'll need to be reminded that that play will be repeated on Monday afternoon on Radio 4 at 3 o'clock.